I think it's going to be greater than most people think. I believe the public has accepted the reality of global warming, and they want something to be done about it. And yet, they do not; they're not keen on sacrificing for that in terms of, let's say, a much higher price for the electricity that they enjoy. Now, in my talk, you know, about the book, I try to illustrate this point by juggling three balls. And one ball is supply of electricity, one is demand and consumption, and the other one is price. And if you throw a fourth ball in there called global warming, those other three balls, you know, you just can't juggle them anymore. And, you know, the best way to optimize or balance all those demands, let's say, is with nuclear power. I just, you know, I've cut this thing, you know, six ways to sundown in my mind and analyses and listen to presentations. I just don't see how we get there with respect to carbon management without a much larger component of nuclear power.
Now, the biggest fear that people do have about that is what you do with the waste with nuclear power. What do we do with that?
And that's why I also advocate in the book that it really has to come with nuclear fuel reprocessing. You know, this is something that the other countries that, you know, have a healthy component of nuclear in their electricity generation mix, they do it, and they do it well. There's technologies to do it. We've done it here in the past. It was forbidden, by the Carter administration, and then was allowed again, but we didn't build anything. So there is a way to manage that. You know, inevitably, there is a long-term nuclear fuel waste stream that has to be managed, but it's very small in volume. And if you look at all the realistic options to manage carbon from fossil fuel plants, those are also, it's a long-term, you know, forever management situation. So it's just a matter of choosing what I think is the lesser of two evils.
Final question for you, Jason, and that is, you write towards the end of the book about the impact, the real impact of globalization on electricity, and you reference two books. One I'm not so familiar with, which is called The Joy at Work, A Revolutionary Approach to Fun on the Job, and another that I am, and I think some of our listeners are, that's John Perkins' book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. If you could tell us what those two books are about, basically, and why you alluded to both of them and talking about the impact of a globalization that America and energy companies had in the 90s.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought those two up. That I found those two books to be, you know, kind of a dichotomy. And for someone like myself, who was part and parcel and participated in the globalization of the electricity business in the 1990s, I just found them to be a fascinating contrast. But, you know, there's good and bad with everything, and I think Perkins goes through all the reasons why we ended up with companies like Enron and, you know, consulting companies running around the world telling countries why it would be best to deregulate and make their electricity businesses competitive. You know, a lot of that didn't serve a good end. But on the other hand, Dennis Bakke's book, which is pretty much about his experience with his company, AES Corporation, you know, they took a different tack. They went into countries to do good, to recognize that electricity infrastructure improves the standard of living for everyone. And they, you know, they're in countries that most American countries at the time did not want to participate in. So, you know, you just get two completely different versions of the reality that was globalization of electricity in the 1990s.